Beautiful. Marilyn, do you want to say something again to start us off, to just create the history or the context or the moment, and then we'll dive into the topic?
I would. I just want to take a moment just to kind of breathe together here, because it's such a wonderful representation of the country here, with all the different places that have come on board today. It's not just California. We've really had a much bigger span this week, which is wonderful, just wonderful. It just sort of came out of two things. Gather the Women does an event each year called, it's a celebration of International Women's Day on March 8th, and this year our theme was Women Leading the Way. And afterwards, one of our participants, Ms. Jan Cohen, came up and said, would you be interested in continuing this conversation? Well, I thought that was the best idea I'd heard all day, and so there we are. We're taking this conversation on how women will lead the way and how we really define our leadership as opposed to the masculine model. And so that's sort of the origins again. And the first week was small but delicious. I thought the conversation was deep and open, and I'm just excited about hearing more. So, Jen?
Great, thank you. Thank you. So, just a couple of words about me. My name is Jen Cohen, and I'm apparently from both Nevada City, California, and Boston, Massachusetts. I can't seem to quite make up my mind, apparently. And so I've decided not to try anymore.
Good.
And I've been in the conversation about leadership for about a decade, and I've been in a conversation about women and empowerment and our fruition for a decade beyond that, for about 20 years. So there's lots more I could say, but I don't want to waste our time on that. If people are interested in more about that, I'm happy to share it at some other time.
Well, let's just give them your website. I think that would be short and to the point.
Yeah, so you can go to www.sevenstonesleadership.com, which most of you have been to because you signed up for the class. In fact, all of you have been to it because you've already signed up for the class. So
if you want to know more, go back and read in detail.
Exactly. The title of this talk, or this conversation, not talk, but this conversation, is You Are the First Organization You Must Master, Taking Care of Ourselves and Being in Condition to Lead Over Time. And some of you signed up for the series, and some of you signed up specifically for this particular conversation. And I'm curious, just to get a feel from a few of you, we won't be able to do a whole round robin just because of time, but let's see if we can get a representative sample from us of what about that particular conversation is important or relevant to you right now in this moment.
This is Susan Nolan from Rapid City, South Dakota, and I had intended to be on the last call, and I didn't have the right contact information, and I just missed it. So what appeals to me about this in a big way is I'm running for school board in my district, and it's a very, very patriarchal, powerful, top-down kind of model, and I want to bring a different voice and a different leadership style to this effort. And that's what attracted me to this whole topic.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hey, this is Lori in Atlanta. And this topic is so appropriate for me right now, as I work for a general contractor in Atlanta, Georgia, and as you can imagine, it's pretty male-dominant around here. And I have been moved, put onto the fast track for executive leadership here, and since I am competing with so many men, I am not leaving any area, any stone unturned. And I do know that a lot of my contemporaries, male contemporaries, don't even think about looking at themselves. And I know how much power is there.
That's great. Thank you.
My name is Lori Cahoon from Petaluma, California. Hi. I'm interested in the whole series. I didn't know about, I might have missed it on the email, but I didn't know about the first one, so that's why I'm joining now. But this topic is of particular interest to me because I'm an acupuncturist and holistic healthcare practitioner for 27 years or so. So my work in that arena and other arenas, spiritual work, is really about empowering people and reminding people and helping people, you know, come back to the reality that we have to take care of ourselves first to do anything in life, especially lead whatever we lead.
Beautiful.
This is Carol Andrea in Columbus, Ohio, and I'm a coach myself, but my particular area of interest is I'm involved with women's funds. And if anybody doesn't know about women's funds, I'd love to tell you. But it's looking at how we can effect change around issues affecting women and girls and leadership and the whole issue of leadership and power and how it's defined are of great interest to me.
Great. God. So yummy. Hello.
Yes, yummy. So great.
Yeah, this is Kat. I'd like to add something, if that's okay still.
Beautiful, yeah, go.
I'm a psychotherapist and coach and writer, and I think in terms of systems, in my interactions with the world and with my clients, but interestingly enough, I don't think I think of myself as a system in the way that I could. So I didn't know about this topic, but I am just so excited about this as a topic.
Oh, my God. You are my plant. You're my audience plant. There's always one in every group, if you know. In the lead groups, all of you women, there's always one. It's so fabulous. So thank you. That's such a beautiful segue.
Great.
And then let's see if we can just hear from all the other women on this call at some point in the next 45 minutes who wish to have their voice in the space. No pressure at all. So I broke the conversation into two sections based on the title. And the first part of the conversation is called You Are the First Organization You Must Master. And then the second half of the conversation, not like it has to go in linear order, but is taking care of ourselves and what that really means. And our acupuncturist, our resident acupuncturist on the call. I'm sorry, I already forgot your name. I tried to write everything
Lori.
Down, but I didn't. Lori.
Okay, Lori.
Thank you, Lori. You know, the Chinese system is such a beautiful model for understanding. And understanding some of that. So, but if we start with you are the first organization you must master, one of the things that I'm going to say a few things and then I'm going to invite us to engage in a dialogue and ask some questions. And then I'll, you know, that'll sort of be the flow. So I'll introduce an idea and then we can play with the idea and we'll move around like that. But one of the things that So the title, You Are the First Organization You Must Master, is actually a quote from Lao Tzu that says, we are the first organization we must master. And it's an interesting use of the term organization, but what I say to people is, we are an organization. We're a physical, anatomical, emotional, spiritual structure, and we are organized in a certain way. We become organized by the thought patterns in which we habitually engage, the breath patterns in which we habitually engage, the behaviors in which we habitually engage, and that becomes an organization that has a huge influence on the way we are in the world. And what happens is we made up those patterns and we get organized around a certain set of things, usually pretty early in life, fortunately or unfortunately. And then we get, you know, we grow up, we all grow up, or at least we get these big bodies anyway, and then we create dreams, we create grown-up dreams. And the organization that we have become, the structure that we've become, is not kind of in condition or not really available to fulfill on the dreams the way that we want it to. The organization that we've become is organized around something that happened or something that we made up or a series of things from the past. And the good news is the organization that we are, the thinking that we are, the breath that we are, the body that we are, the story that we are, the emotional content that we are, is all malleable. It's all plastic. And so it means that we can begin to reorganize ourselves. And that process, from my point of view, is the foundation of leading and what it means to lead. So that we actually are creating and authoring and designing who we say we are and how we operate in the world. And if we can have some power relative to that, we can begin to show others a way to shift who they are and what they're committed to and how they organize themselves and their communities differently.
Could I interrupt as a plant?
Yes, my plant. Continue on, please.
I just want to say, Marilyn's heard me say this before. I don't say it all the time, but I adore you. This is extraordinary information.
You did not receive any digits of your access code.
Oh,
if you are using a rotary dial telephone, please hang up and call back using a touch tone telephone. If you are using a voiceover internet service such as Vonage or Skype, we strongly advise calling back using a traditional long-distance carrier. If you are using a cellular or mobile telephone, you may need to hold
time
somewhat longer in order for the text tones to register with our equipment. If you are using a calling card, it may be that the calling card is trapping your digits, preventing us from receiving them, even if you can hear them. You may need to hang up and call back without using the calling card.
Welcome
to the conference call, a service of www.freeconference.com. When you have entered your conference, please announce...
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yay.
We're back.
Phew.
Okay. I just want to acknowledge what Pat just said, and this is beautifully done. Just beautifully done. Thank you. Now let's get into it.
Great. I don't even know what I did, but I'm so glad you like it.
Well, I'll tell you later.
Okay, you tell me later,
it's
baby.
Called big. Well, one of the things that I wanted to say in addition to what you put out is how much incredible brain research is going on now to really that really addresses this recreation of patterns, if you will. And it's very,
if you
very
are using a cellular or mobile telephone, you may need to hold the buttons down.
So it sounds to me like someone called in from a kind of telephone that they don't like, apparently, like this whole thing about if you're calling from Skype or Vonage.
Right.
I tried not to listen too intently to the message. But so if you are a woman who just most recently called in and you called in from not a landline or maybe even a regular cell phone, you may be the one triggering this message. And if you have a way to call in some other way, that would be great, or at least disconnect and try to call back in so we don't keep repeating the message, and you also don't have to just keep hearing it, whoever you are.
That's great.
Okay. And I apologize, everyone. The technology is less than perfect.
But it's pretty good.
But it's all right.
Yes, so there is lots of brain science and to support this and lots of other things too. And the question that I wanted to ask all of us, and then I'm also open to other comments and just ways that this spurred people's thinking, but I wanted to ask us a question and give people a moment. We did a little bit in the last call of just quiet time and writing time. If you're a writer or like to take notes, this would be a moment to pull out a scratch pad and a pen or pencil. If you're not a writer and don't prefer that, you can just allow the question that I'm about to ask just to, you know, just to wash over you and to allow whatever comes into consciousness to just be there without any judgment or, you know, even understanding of what it is, but just allowing what comes to come. And the question is, in what way are you currently organized around something from the past and not organized around whatever it is you're committed to for yourself and the world now? And just take a moment and let something bubble up. Just let an intuition or a knowing or an answer come from anywhere. Or take a few notes. In what way are you organized? Body, mind, spirit, psychology, emotion, breath, around something that basically no longer supports you and doesn't allow you to take care of you or the people that you want to take care of anymore.
Hi, this is Lori in Atlanta. I can offer something on that.
Great.
I recently have had in several areas of my life an opportunity to take a look at what might be construed as being a control freak. I always thought that I was just taking care of business and looking out for everyone and everything, and have recently taken a step back and found out that actually I was hindering myself and sometimes hindering others. And that when you step back from controlling, that it a lot of other wonderful gifts unfold, not only from yourself but also from the others around you. And so I have been practicing self-lack of control, so to speak, and I'm finding it's huge. It's amazing on many, many levels.
That's great. Thank you. So I'm present to something before anyone else speaks. Lori, as you shared, I created this almost instant grid, and I thought we could make a list of things that people might say about the way that we've become organized historically, like control or fear or anger or anything that any of us are about to say, and then either the list of things we've things we're creating. So what I would say about what you just said is you've moved from control to trust and a certain kind of personal power. So to let go of control, we have to drop into something else.
Yes, we do.
And if we make a list of sort of the historical conditioning and then, you know, so from control to trust, and we go here, we may get a very interesting list of from a masculine model to a feminine model.
Mm-hmm.
Just a hunch.
That's
so let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And kind of hand in hand with that trust is it is allowing me to allow others the space to show up.
Yeah.
So in a way,
yeah,
it's trust, but it's also I am giving others a gift to be who they are.
Yeah.
With no judgment.
That's right. Well, and it's an empowerment for you, and it's an empowerment for them, right? All of a sudden there's space for their bigness and their greatness to emerge.
Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thanks for starting us off with that. That's fabulous.
Dan, this is Susan, and I think of when you've framed it like this, ways that I've organized myself that don't serve me very well is the sense of urgency, of rush, of hurry, of, you know, that hurry up. We've got to get this done, you know. And, I was in a meeting last Saturday where I felt so pushed and rushed. And I could see myself having operated that way a lot, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work anymore. It just does not work to where there's this sense of what we get finished here, the product is much more important than the process.
Yeah.
You know, hurry up. Gotta move. No time. Next thing. Oh, it just set my nerves on edge. And I think we live in a world where there's, particularly if you live in school systems, and maybe all systems, there's this incredible urgency to hurry up. Get it done. Don't waste time.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work anymore. It just it leaves me dangled and rattled and irritable.
One of my leadership mentors has this distinction she calls the golden pause.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually has this whole, you know, she could spend a day with leaders. It's this beautiful conversation about the value of the pause. What happens? And, you know, Marilyn, to kind of circle back around to your brain science, you know, when the body is in that rush, hurry up, end game, usually the brain sort of devolves into a fight or flight state, so you're in the limbic or the reptilian brain.
Exactly.
And for innovation to happen, for creation to happen, you have to be able to be in the neocortex and the prefrontal lobes, and the body neurophysiologically has to be in a state of rest.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our first conversation, and this relates, I think, because we talked about the need to be able to live in the unknown, which is not part of our culture either. But what I said, when I sat with that, I realized when you sit with that and you are in the unknown and you're comfortable and you're okay with it, in that space, which is the golden pause, you also allow the new truth to come up, to rise. When we're moving quickly, we tend to recycle over and over and over again our own patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the need for this golden pause.
That's beautiful. Well, it's a beautiful point, because so many times when I'm on a cycle of having to get so much done, the quiet time is cluttered with the guilt around what hasn't gotten done.
Right.
And, you know, in really clearing that to allow the the pause and the silence to be there.
So great. Yeah, there's this beautiful quote that I love. I actually found it on a holiday card. Can you believe it? And it says, movement is what creates life. Stillness is what creates love. To be still and still moving, that is everything.
Whew.
Movement is what creates life. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Stillness is what
creates
life.
Those two principles are, I don't know if anybody knows the tarot deck, but the card, the chariot, which is the principle of change, is described as stillness in movement.
Wow.
And so change is, you know, the only constant, they say, we know. And stillness and movement are the two aspects of natural change.
While our list is short, I can see what you're saying about if you put out this list, you begin to see the masculine model and moving to the feminine model more and more clearly. One of the things that I thought of was, you know, taking things personally. Now, that may be a very feminine thing, I don't know, but, you know, moving away from the norm, which is that we sort of tend to take things personally, is a whole other freedom to be able to say and step forward and do what is necessary.
Yeah, beautiful.
Well, when you say
when you say take things personally, too, this is Gina, I think of ego, you know, which is very, you know, masculine.
Exactly.
You know, so you could almost think of, like, okay, it's not just about me. So if you kind of put it in masculine, feminine, it's sort of ego, it's all about me versus it's all about the community and awesome relationship.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you.
And I actually
Marilyn is kind of, I mean, when you move out of that, not taking things personally.
Can you say your name?
Kind of
talk?
Is Susan. Yeah.
Great, beautiful. Thank you.
Marilyn, is it a kind of cognitive restructuring, or how do you move from that way of thinking about, God, that's my fault, I screwed up, I did that wrong, to a different, healthier way to think about that?
Practicing awareness, right?
Yeah, it is practicing awareness, and I don't go to that place of, oh gosh, I've done something wrong. It's usually like, oh dear, I've offended someone, or I've done something that someone's interpreted in a way that I didn't mean. So there's many ways in which we take things personally, I think, and one of them is that we feel badly about what has happened, and we think we're at fault for that. But I do think that that the bigger vision, the larger frame, if we can hang on to it, we can move out of that space.
So, Susan, I think it was you who just asked the question. I want to actually make it a broader question, but then, Gina, I think you also had something else you wanted to share, and I want to make sure we go back to that.
Oh, thanks.
So I'll just bookmark that. Hold on one second. Can I just do my thought, or it's toast?
Of course.
which is, Susan, the larger question is, how do any of us make the shift from the historical organization that we may be in? And we're multiple beings, so there's ways that we're in historical organizations and ways that we're not, but how do we shift any patterning from the past to a kind of personal mastery in the present? And there are a jillion answers to that question, but I want to give us that bigger question of the how, and we can circle back around toward the end and talk about it a little bit. You know, I think you wanted to say something else, honey.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
This is all so amazing and so interesting and so needed in our world. But anyways, I just, you know, from a personal standpoint, I've been looking a lot at, and I'm going to use the word addictions kind of like broadly. You know, I'm not addicted to drugs. I'm not like in a gutter or anything like that. But I look at things, I look at the way, you know, I use wine to relax, or I look at how I fuel myself with coffee, or I distract myself with TV. And it's almost like, you know, if I kind of whittle that down and look at, you know, there are maybe emotions or situations that I don't want to be with. And I think that, you know, at the feminine perspective is, you know, allows for more room for emotion and room for, I don't know, like working with conflict as opposed to stepping over it or avoiding it, or, you know, using things to distract or avoid. So,
beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, in the discourse of rationalism, which is the discourse that's pervaded the last, you know, 400 or 500 years, when René Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. And immediately there was a separation that got created between mind and body. And the rational, linear, logical, cognitive thinking, which was associated with the male, got revered. And intuitive, emotional, spirit, knowing, intuition, body-based, all got marginalized. And there had been other aspects of that marginalization even prior to that in history, but it was a huge line of demarcation. And the rise of scientific thought and the idea that there's an objective universe out there, and it is the job of human beings, mostly men, probably mostly, well, whatever, mostly men, to go out and discover, conquer, understand, and quantify that universe. We made this huge separateness where there isn't any. And the result, you know, the good news is we're all on this conference line together, which would not be possible had that thinking not been elevated. So that's the, you know, that I can talk to, that we have Florida and Georgia, and we could even have Pakistan on the line, and we could have, you know, all of that is the gift of the last 500 years, and the curse of the last 500 years is, Gina, exactly what you're talking about,
yeah,
which
exactly.
is this separation
mm-hmm.
that has, and I think addiction is a fabulous term. We are all addicted to something.
Mm-hmm.
We're addicted to our historical patterns. They
mm-hmm.
become addictions, whether, and anesthetizing ourselves
mm-hmm.
has become part of our coping
mm-hmm.
as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And numbing has become a way that we manage all that we've created. And I would say it belongs on the list beautifully, old paradigm, new paradigm, which is, you know, and the new paradigm is really the old paradigm, right? You know, it's really embracing what was
mm-hmm.
always true and is true about humans, which is that we are feeling, sensing creatures, and our emotionality and our body is intrinsically linked to our intelligence and our capacity to create
mm-hmm.
and to be able to be with everything.
Right, right.
Inside ourselves, everything, our hate, our love, our fear, our jealousy, to be able to make a seat at the table for that allows us to make a seat at the table for everything else that's happening in the world.
Right. And this is Lori in Atlanta, and that is so, I love that because, you know, this is where duality comes in, and because of, you know, the way we have evolved, we have labels on our duality, right, wrong, good, bad, and we can't be with what we label as bad or wrong or whatever, and that creates such a problem for us, and it is all about that duality just is. There is no judgment. And what I'm trying to share with the people that I work with is that, you know, life is not about solving problems, you know, problems as in bad. Life is problems. It's just what it is. And if you go around trying to, you know, with the bad label, the wrong label, and trying to fix and take care of, guess what? You just get more of that.
That's right. It's beautiful. You know, it's thesis, antithesis, synthesis, right? That's the way it's designed on this plane of existence. Now, the why it's designed that way, you know, I have a list of questions for the big house when I get there, and it's on my list. But, you know, I don't know why it's designed that way down here, but it is designed that way, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And then you get the next thesis, antithesis, and the next synthesis, right? That's evolution at work. There is no
mm-hmm.
such thing, as one of my dear colleagues says, as a negative emotion. There is no such thing. Talk about addictions. We have an unbelievable addiction to the positive.
Yes.
An absolute.
I love that.
I mean, it's an obsession with the positive.
Yep.
Which constantly creates the negative.
Right. Well, what we do is we marginalize, and anything that's marginalized comes back and bites us on the butt, right? So anything that we push away, anything that we put to the margins, and we all know this, whether we're white women or women of color on this call, we know what it is to be pushed to the margins, then it produces a resistance, right? You know, that's how power works. It produces a kind of resistance, and then there's an uprising of some kind.
And there's no arriving at one single place. It is an ongoing conversation, an ongoing process.
That's right.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, I mean, you know, if there's an arrival,
yeah.
I mean, I suppose there's nirvana, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there is some arrival place, not on this plane, but it doesn't appear, and I am certainly not a spiritual master by any stretch of anybody's imagination, but it doesn't seem like it. For sure, it seems like, and whoever said this earlier, the process is the thing. Like, that's the whole deal.
Right, right.
Well, each moment is a new moment.
Yeah.
And a new present.
Yeah.
Well, I love what Edwards just said to her children about life, which is life is not about all the wonderful things as much as how you handle that which comes up to confront you. How you handle that. That's what we're here to do. Mm. And I love that.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that, this is Gina, that leads to another distinction where we're so goal-oriented and results-oriented, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to embracing the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much that we cheat ourselves. So many ways we cheat ourselves when we're so focused on just meeting the goal and then the next goal and then the next goal and then the next goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is Lori Cahoon from Petaluma. I'd like to add something. My answer that bubbled up the question about how I'm currently organized around something from the past and not organized around the truth of who I am and moving into. Excuse me. My answer came in the form of a long-term pattern of working through issues of resistance to self-care, even though I have, you know, if we compare ourselves, you know, to other, I'm a master. People consider me a master of self-care, and I teach
yeah,
about
right.
it, blah, blah. I know that internally I set up a pattern a long time ago to do as much self-care as I essentially needed and could get away with so that I could be busy doing the rest of the time, doing and producing, et cetera.
Oh, that's good.
Kind of what I could get away with. So I know that I've known for a long time that that resistance, that knowing and yet resisting, was not serving me, and that it actually is an ancestral familial pattern.
Mm.
And I've been working to learn all that I can about it and allow myself to see the signals for impetus for change and kind of letting go and settling into what's really right for me, you know, as time evolves. And part of what has happened is that my fully moving towards stepping into more of who I am as a leader and a teacher has increased my ambition and my stress to the point where I get it that I can't resist more self-care anymore. I have to step into it in order to do and be who I'm supposed to be now and into the future. And it's exciting.
Great, thank you.
It's a challenge.
So you're my second
exciting.
Plant of the conversation, apparently.
Right.
One of the things I just wanted to share, and then we can start to talk about, so beautiful what you said, Lori. I mean, there's a thousand things about it, but the thing I want to pull out to stay kind of on topic is I've been either a therapist or a coach for the last 20 years, and there is not a human being, I've coached man or woman, actually, but certainly not a woman that I have ever been in an intimate conversation with where this issue does not arise. And one of the things that I say is that we've embodied the dominant paradigm. And we see ourselves as a resource, the same way we see oil and water and you know, all the other resources as something other. We see self as other almost. And we allow ourselves to treat us the way the dominant paradigm treats resource, which is to gobble it up, act as if it's infinite, and have no respect for the balance. And this is where Lori could come in big time for the yin and the yang, for the fact that chi is finite, right? And that when you've used all your, when you used up your allotment, that's it. That's it. The body expires. You're done.
Yeah.
And how do we create a relationship to self that re-honors the subjectivity, the relatedness, and the preciousness and finitude of who we are at, on this plane. We are this paradox. We are infinite, and we are also finite. And we act as if we can plunder the resource of self with no consequence. Mm-hmm. And yet it has enormous consequence.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
So I'm curious what that evokes. You know, we're sort of shifting now from the organization, the historical organization that we've all embodied and become to whatever degree, and then we've all done the work that we've done to shift that or not shift that. And then there's what's the shape? What's the practice? What's the organization of the feminine? What would it actually look like? How would we have to treat self and other? How would we have to treat resource? How would we have to redefine and rearticulate those relationships?
Oh gosh, this is Gina. Can I speak?
Of course you may speak.
I'm just really remembering an art project that I did years ago that was based on, you've all probably heard of at least, Clarissa Pinkola Estes's Women Who Run With the Wolves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So right. She drew a correlation between what's happening to our earth, how we're, you know, we're digging up the trees, we're knocking down forests, we're cutting it up and carving it up, to what we're doing with our bodies. And I'm not making any judgment with women who, you know, opt for plastic surgery, anything like that, but she drew a correlation to how, you know, without a real answer, which is fine, but just it was just such a stark correlation to what, like what we think we can do, like we are carving it up and cutting it up and depleting it as a resource, as you said, Jen, and just reminded me of how powerful that image was that she drew for me, and it's just like, yeah, it's so in opposite to that, you know, in kind of letting go of the. Of that part and embracing the feminine, I just think there needs to be so much more nurturing, you know, so much more growth and birthing and, you know, of ideas and creativity and letting what be, like letting what is be, you know, whether it be our gray hair or our, you know, wrinkles or, you know, and honoring that.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So much of it comes down to really grokking, if you get that word, and owning.
Dating yourself, honey.
learning that. I grok.
But it's really about grokking our own inner wisdom and allowing and owning it in a way that's where we truly come from. As
yeah.
women, as men.
Yeah. I also want to make space in this moment for folks who haven't spoken. There's Stacy and Vicky and Carol and Shay and Pat. People who haven't spoken as much. Just wanting to make sure if you want your voices in the space that you have the quiet to. Sometimes people need some space before they can step in. All of those of us who like to talk a lot.
This is Stacy, and I'll say that the call is a gift to me, and serendipitously I'm at kind of a struggle point and had decided to release and ask for gifts, and here you are.
You want to say anything else about what the gift is or just what's percolating in there? And again, not to put you on the spot, you absolutely can pass, but I'm just curious about what's
touching
you.
It's very personal, but I'm certainly interested in the paradigm shift into a yin-yang balance in the way we approach our world. But very personally, on a micro level, as above, so below, I'm going through a lot of transitioning and shifting up vibrationally. And then, but it's sometimes it's the relationships right under your nose that catch you blindsided.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I'm focused on the macro and so happy with the lightness I'm finding in my life, what I'm finding is I have a huge issue of control and staying in the past embodied dominant paradigm when it comes to my husband.
Yeah,
great. Yeah.
With you, girl.
Jen, this is Shay.
Yeah, Shay, please.
Hi. I've just been thinking about my self-care practices and thinking about the evolution of them, and in the context of our conversation today, thinking about how even a self-care practice for me can become really masculine. Like, I do this thing, whatever it is, you know, I drink this tea or I do this meditation at this time every day or whatever I set up, and how that has felt really rigid to me. And as I've been discovering what works for me, it's more of a flow, kind of the container for my practice is more fluid than, because I had even approached self-care as in a historical paradigm, like in this rigid way. And I think, you know, one thing I'm confronting recently is in the flow of being responsive to my needs moment to moment, there is this balance with structure, with needing some structure, and also with, you know, the parts of my psychology that want to stop doing something because it's inconvenient or because I've run out of time or because I start to think I don't, quote-unquote, need it anymore. And I can mistake that inner conversation for the part of me that is seeking more of a feminine approach to taking care of myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. It's beautiful because, you know, we're not talking about the eradication of the masculine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're talking about balance. So, I mean, I think some of the way that we can listen to this conversation about beginning to rise up a feminine or value or privilege a feminine perspective is to say, now we're doing the same thing to the masculine. And what I want to be really clear is that that if we're actually gonna be that we're bringing something to light for the sake of a larger balance. The thesis,
yeah.
Antithesis, synthesis. So it isn't about then privileging the feminine and that's what's good and the masculine is bad. We're back in the polarity, right? It's that one thing got privileged so extremely and something else as equally important to men and women. Every single psyche, every single creature on the planet needs that balance.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, and the other
and that seems to be the
other thing I heard you say, Shay, is there's a way that self-care happens as yet another thing to do, and the self is still somehow separate. It's like, well, I have this thing called a body. I have this thing called a body, and I know if I don't take care of it, it will deteriorate more quickly. So this is sort of the mistake we can make around sustainability. Well, okay, I guess we don't have any oil, so now let's, you know, power it all by the sun or do something that's a little bit more renewable. But we're not actually getting at the source of what created such massive imbalance. And our individual psyches and bodies are little microcosms of that imbalance.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate how you're taking that and relating it to the body as well. I mean, that we need to see what is sustainable within ourselves, as well.
Yeah.
As we're getting near the end, I have a wonderful quote. So when you're ready, I'd love to offer this.
Okay, beautiful. Other folks in the last 4 or 5 minutes that we have. And someone, I just want to also say, someone's got a radio or a TV or something going on in the background. I don't know if you know who you are, but if you can mute your line, that would be lovely. Thank you.
Okay. this is Carol. And
I am really glad to hear you talk about the balance, because I feel really strongly that we are out of balance, obviously. And I think that for me and for a lot of people I've talked to, the whole issue of stepping into power, finding ways that fit and honor who we are, and yet in a world that is still pretty much has this model out there that it, to be powerful you have to be X way, and finding the balance in you that finds some accommodation so that you can be heard and be out in the world in a way that honors the inner you and yet still gets heard in the way that we traditionally hear things. So that's kind of where I am, is struggling with how do I do that, and how do I stand forward and stand up in my own power in a way that works for me and yet is still heard.
Yeah. When you answer that question, did you get back to us?
Yeah, right. give me another 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of, I mean, there's a lot of really important questions, but to me the question you just asked is really up there, which is, it's the translator question. It's how do we walk between the worlds? How do we become the exemplars? How do we take care of ourselves as we're asking the world to be taken care of, and yet still be a voice that people who are not where we are can hear? That's one of the major questions of leading. How do you speak into the current listening and shift the listening at the same time? And it's, I think, part art and part science.
There's a lot of how-tos that we need to be addressing in terms of how do we bring that balance. Vicki, are you still on the phone?
Yeah.
Vicki Henschen? Okay. I'd like to quote Vicki Henschen, if I may.
She's
written an article called The 21st Century Human Upgrade, and I love it, but this is a quote which I think kind of summarizes or at least encompasses a lot of what we're saying. And this is from Vicki. Once we forgot our infinite connection to a greater consciousness and our multidimensional divine natures, humans co-created our personal and consensual realities from a very limited consciousness. We created instead through filters of fear, from a framework of separation, from ego-driven defensiveness, from our unacknowledged limiting beliefs, and from the constraints of personal unresolved trauma and conditioning. It is no wonder that things look so imbalanced. And I think within that beautiful quote is really the answer to, we must remember our infinite connection to a greater consciousness and our multidimensional divine natures. Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you, Marilyn. I was sort of gathering my thoughts for what I, what I was left with from this call, and I'm just so aware, especially having written that article and just being in the presence of, sisters who share profound visions and work with me. Just so much being aware of the remnants and the shadows of my own limiting voice that comes from, my own patriarchal wounding, and how that voice can show up in ways where I still, despite all the, outwardly wonderful things that I've been doing in the world, it still can unravel me on the inside, where this limiting voice still comes through in a way that I hold back, or I feel myself even, I've sort of identified with this diminishing, self-diminishing voice, and how that thwarts my flow and my sense of moving forward. And so as I've been listening to this call, and listening to each of you, I just got more clear that how I would describe the core of my self-care practice right now is this intense inner listening, and I'm really being attentive for when the voice shows up that wants to recreate the diminished holding back pattern, and I really am working to listen beyond that to what opens and expands me and reconnects me to Source, and to really make a commitment whenever I hear that interior voice, limiting voice, to make the choice to reconnect with Source right at that moment. And that's become my self-care practice at this point.
Nice, nice.
Marilyn, was the quote that you read of Vicki's the quote that you wanted to read?
Yeah, that's the book. That's the quote I wanted to read, and it was Vicki's
okay,
quote.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah.
So I want to honor. I want to honor our time, and that we're almost at the top of the hour. And I want to. I want to leave with a practical question and a non-practical question. The practical question is, I know that. For myself, just on this call, I thought, oh, my God, it would be great to be able to ask Lori this or Vicki that or have more conversation. And we don't really have a way set up for all of you in this group. Gather the Women has a way, but we don't have a way in terms of this small series for people to talk. And we could set up a simple Ning group or some sort of site where people could be able to put our pictures and be able to find each other if there's something or someone that you want to have a longer conversation with. Is that something you want us to do?
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
And let me suggest that we already have the site if you want to use it. We have the site.
Gather the Women Ning site?
gatherthewomen.ning.com, and it isn't being well used at the moment. I would love to see this conversation, which would go out to other Gather the Women people. So that would be
okay,
fabulous.
So let me say this. Then we'll have my assistant send out that, what Marilyn just said, for those of us who aren't fast writers. We'll resend that out. We're joining a larger subgroup, but...
Yes.
If you want to join it, then say, I'm on the Women's Leadership Series, so that other people on the Women's Leadership Series can find, we can find, oh, right, that was the Vicki that was on the call, and I wanted to ask her, blah, 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 so that we could then find each other. Is that satisfactory as a way for people to be able to resource and access one another?
Sounds good. Yeah, I'd like to put a name out about a book that I think is fabulous on the topic we've just been discussing.
Okay, beautiful. So we'll send out an email to all of you after this call, and we'll let you know that way. And if you have other requests or things, you can also just email myself or Marilyn offline and let us know, and we'll try to set something up so you can find one another and we can find you. Thank you all for a beautiful conversation. And the non-practical question to leave everyone with... since in the last call we said really what we are is the keeper of the questions right now, is what body and what shape and what organization do we need to be and practice to bring to form everything we want to bring to form as women, as mothers, as leaders, as humans, as spirits? What body, what shape, what organization do we need to be and practice to give birth to all that?
Jim, when's the next call?
The next call is in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Same time, same day.
It's
Susan,
did you get the reminder, Susan, which has all the dates on it? If you didn't, I'll forward it to you.
Okay, thanks. Marilyn, I'd appreciate that if you would, because I want to send that out to some people, too.
Okay.
This
has been fabulous. This is Laurie, and this has been fabulous. I've loved it very much. Very inspiring.
Oh, thank you all
so much.
This is Robin,
and I
want to... women.
Yeah.
Have a fabulous day. And
thanks. You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you all.
Gorgeous, honey.
Bye-bye.